Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 28th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, hundreds of abortion rights proponents rally in Dubuque. Story by Eric Hogstrom, thmedia.com. Allison Simpson felt angry. She felt like she'd be better off gathering with people who felt as angry as she did. I'm a shy person, so this isn't like me, but I am angry, said Simpson in Bellevue, Iowa. Simpson organized a rally supporting abortion rights that drew about 200 people Sunday to the Dubuque County Courthouse. The rally followed in the wake of Friday's Dobbs v. Jackson decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, a decision that rolled back constitutional protections for abortion that were nearly 50 years old. I didn't see anyone else doing it, organizing a rally. And I knew there were other people who felt like me, Simpson said. I think it's important to show our support for abortion rights because it's a critical thing for our community. The recent decision overturning Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court will disproportionately impact poor, working-class, minority communities. With Simpson leading the way, rally participants listened to several speakers before marching along the sidewalk, circling the courthouse chant, alternating chants of, "We won't go back," and "My body, my choice." I can't do much, but this rally is one step I can take, Simpson said. Lindsay Quam of Dubuque attended the hour-long rally with her daughters. It's a major right I feel passionate about, Quam said of abortion. I feel every person who has a uterus should have this choice, and I feel very strongly that my two daughters, when they grow up, should be able to choose what their future looks like, and I want them to be able to choose without feeling shame or guilt. Iowa Representative Lindsay James D. Dubuque attended the rally. She told the crowd she never knew life before the Roe decision in 1973. I heard the stories that my mother and grandmother passed down, James said. They were whispers of the realities of women starkly different than my own, realities that I did not have to face. James called the recent high court decision, quote, the most significant rollback of human rights in modern history. She noted those who were served by abortion rights protections. For 50 years, Roe protected low-income women, women of color, women in rural parts of our country, all menstruating people, and for 50 years, Roe protected girls who were molested, people who were raped, moms working 2 to 3 jobs to support the children they already have, and people whose lives were at risk, James said. Jacob I. Orger of Dyersville, Iowa, said he participated in the rally to show that men support abortion rights as well as women. We need to show everybody that this Supreme Court decision is not okay, Iorger said. Passing cars frequently honked at the sign-carrying participants. Iorger said the honking provided a positive signal to people at the rally. It's great, he said. It means there's more support than you think, but they're scared to do it until they see the rally crowd. Simpson said more rallies are planned. We're hoping to get more people involved, she said. We're hoping to do another march and get people together to share their stories. I think today people just wanted to let out some frustration, so that's what we're doing today. We're definitely going to be doing more in the future. Former banking community leader remembered for contributions to Dubuque. Story by Eric Hogstrom, thmedia.com. A community leader and philanthropist described as the, quote, George Bailey of Dubuque has died. J. Bruce Merriweather died Saturday. He was 84. All of us have role models, and Bruce was that for me. He's a personal hero for me, said Rick Dickinson, executive director of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation. Merriweather served as a leader in Dubuque's banking community, helped create Greater Dubuque Development Corporation to boost the community's faltering economy in the 1980s, formed the Dubuque Council for Diversity when the community faced racial challenges in the 1990s, and served as acting president of his alma mater, University of Dubuque, when it faced a financial crisis. He was the George Bailey of Dubuque, Dickinson said. The wonderful life we live here is in many ways due to him. Other organizations Merriweather served included the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, Hillcrest Family Services, Wallard High School, United Way, Westminster Presbyterian Church, Junior Achievement, Dubuque Museum of Art, United Point Health, Finley Hospital, and Iowa College Foundation. He was big-hearted, said Nancy Van Milligan, president and CEO of Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. He loved his family and his community deeply. Meriwether received the Telegraph Herald's First Citizen Award in 1993. He was a very strong philanthropist, but I would say his biggest contribution was how he engaged the community through his significant leadership roles on the issue of the day, said Jeffrey Bullock, University of Dubuque's current president. That's one of the things I admire most about Bruce. He was a thoughtful leader who was not afraid to be out front on important issues. Meriwether grew up in Taylorville, Illinois. He arrived at the University of Dubuque on a basketball scholarship and played basketball and football. He was a very accomplished student and student athlete. He is in our Athletics Hall of Fame, Bullock said. After graduating, Meriwether joined First National Bank, subsequently known as U.S. Bank, in 1960. Meriwether made banking his career, apart from a couple of years in the late 1960s when he operated his own advertising agency. Meriwether turned his attention to Dubuque's economic woes in the early 1980s, when the local economy was almost entirely dependent on two plants directly tied to the beleaguered farm economy, John Deere Dubuque's Works and the Dubuque Packing Company. He was the founder of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation in 1984, when Dubuque was in a very bad place economically, Dickinson said. Bruce and some other community leaders got together to turn things around, and they did that. In the early 1990s, racial tensions in Dubuque were marked by cross-burnings and rallies by white supremacists that drew national attention. Meriwether responded by helping to create an organization to improve the community's racial climate in May 1992, the Dubuque Council for Diversity. Bruce put his personal life and his professional reputation on the line to say racism was unacceptable behavior in Dubuque, Dickinson said. The council's existence sparked controversy from some quarters of the community, but Meriwether persisted. We witnessed his leadership and his courage, Van Mulligan said of the creation of the council. It showed his true commitment to humankind. By 1996, Meriwether had stepped in to guide his alma mater, serving as acting president for 2 years, following John Agria and prior to Bullock's arrival. He served during a pivotal time in the university's history, Bullock said. He really reestablished the university's core mission. In retirement, Meriwether and his wife Shirley lived 22 years in northern Wisconsin, but in October 2019 returned to Dubuque. The Telegraph Herald's efforts to reach the Meriwether's family for comment for the story were unsuccessful. I'm just so sorry that he passed, Dickinson said. Fortunate he and his wife returned to Dubuque, so he had a couple more years' opportunity to be with him. Official to request delay of council work session on Five Flags options. Story by John Cruz, thmedia.com. City staff will recommend that the Dubuque City Council members postpone an upcoming work session to discuss the future of the Five Flags Center. Leisure Services Manager Marie Ware told Civic Center Commission members Monday that she will request the postponement of the July 11th work session in order to give city staff more time to prepare and research potential options for improvements to Five Flags to present to council members. Ware's recommendation is expected to be considered by council members at their meeting on Tuesday, July 5th. That will allow us to go back and look at the pros and cons and see what does each one address and what do they not address, Ware said. Ware added that she is also making the recommendation because Five Flags Center General Manager H.R. Cook will be on vacation on July 11th. She said she has not yet determined how long of a postponement she will request. Earlier this month, City Council members voted unanimously to not move forward with a March vote asking residents to approve the city borrowing up to $92 million to construct a new Five Flags Center, which would have expanded seating from 4,000 to 6,400 and made renovations to Five Flags Theater. While council members previously expressed support for taking the proposal to voters, which the Civic Center Commission also recommended, they did not go forward with the vote after it was revealed that borrowing that much money would put the city at 86% of its statutory debt limit and would result in a downgrade of the city's bond rating. Council members have scheduled a work session to discuss other less expensive options that the city could pursue to still make improvements to Five Flags. Previously discussed options range from making minimal repairs and improvements to keep the center operational to a smaller expansion of the arena. Cook said council members could consider other options as well. He detailed a potential redesign of Five Flags that would realign the interior space and create outdoor concert space and seating on Fifth Street and adjacent property for outdoor events in the summer. You close Fifth Street permanently and create a civilian parking lot that you could play to the exterior in the summer and the interior in the winter, Cook said. During the meeting, commission members expressed frustration over the city council's actions, arguing that council members' desire for less expensive option to improve Five Flags might not address all of its problems. For success in the future, we know what the booking agents are asking for, said Rod Bucky, vice chair of the commission. We know what they want. They want more seating and height for the ceiling. Local Iowa officials say elections safe from paper shortage so far. Story by Benjamin Fisher. A paper shortage has led to concerns about impacts to the midterm elections in some places, but officials say it should not impact voting in area Iowa counties. Supply chain issues still reverberating from the COVID-19 pandemic, inflation, and order delays have caused a now global paper shortage. Local election officials from around the country have petitioned Congress to act on the issue ahead of the midterms, leading to a roundtable with the U.S. House of Representatives Administration Committee in late March. Area county election officials in Iowa, however, said recently they believe they have secured all the ballot and envelope paper they should need for the November general election. Clayton County Auditor Jennifer Garbs is president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors. She also represents Iowa at the National Bipartisan Policy Center, where the paper shortage has been discussed. There are states that are struggling to do that with that, especially those that do vote by mail, she said. It's not necessarily regular envelopes. It's the ones with the secrecy on the inside and the window on the front. Or, if you wanted a thicker cardstock for your ballots, those are harder to come by. Garm said Clayton County already had some of the ballot paper on hand. I already ordered extra ballot stock because we have the ability to print our ballots in-house, which helps, she said. We also pre-ordered envelope stock with our vendors. It hasn't been printed yet, but they have obtained it for us. Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Dragato said he believes his office is prepared as well. The company that we work for election machines, actually provides us with our ballots as well, he said. They have secured enough supply chains where they have been guaranteed that we will have the paper we need for ballots in the fall. While it is a concern that we are keeping on our radar, until they say something different, we have been assured that our supply chain for our elections are secure for this year. Delaware County Auditor Carla Becker said she did not anticipate issues, but would double-check soon. We've pre-ordered a lot, so we have some in stock, she said. We don't print our own ballots. That would be my only concern. Do they have enough in stock so we can get our ballots in time? It does worry, though, now that you say it, making sure we get our ballots in time. Iowa being a paper ballot state, we need to make sure we have so much. Delaware County contracts with the firm Election Systems and Software. ESNS has been very thoughtful and strategic, ordering stock supplies well in advance of election needs because we have observed delays in the production and delivery of paper products, said Senior Manager of Public Relations Katina Granger in an email. Jackson County Auditor Alyssa Smith and Joe Davis County Illinois Clerk Angela Kaiser did not respond to requests for comment for the story. Wisconsin elections are handled by municipalities. Several officials in the area did not respond to requests for comments. Dubuque County supervisors approve new anti-harassment measures. Hire county engineer. Story by Benjamin Fisher, thmedia.com. Dubuque County supervisors on Monday night approved a new anti-harassment policy and complaint procedure for county employees, just months after a high-profile harassment complaint from a former employee. The 9-page document details what behavior is considered discrimination, harassment, bullying, and sexual harassment. It explicitly states the county's intention to protect employees from that behavior from their colleagues. be that discrimination based on race, color, religion, age, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, pregnancy, national origin, disability, marital, or other protected status, and encourages those experiencing the behavior to promptly inform management. The new policy replaces a two-item section of the county's general employment policies regarding harassment, which focuses specifically on sexual harassment and gives employees 3 working days from the incident to begin the county's grievance procedure. In May, then victim witness coordinator Allie Newsom resigned from the Dubuque County Attorney's Office after the conclusion of a harassment process she filed against former Assistant County Attorney Richard Kirkendall. Outside counsel investigated and found the complaint to be unsubstantiated, but Newsom said in her resignation that the county's harassment policy failed to protect her. County Auditor Kevin Dragato said Monday that the new policy had been some of the final work of former Human Resources Director Don Sherman, who had overseen Newsom's complaint before she resigned earlier this month. Our county attorney, C.J. May III, and HR director were working in tandem on this policy, he told supervisors. County Supervisor Ann McDonough said the new policy had been in the process of being created for some time and supported it quickly being enacted. It's been in the works for months, she said. I think it's wise to get the policy in place. Supervisor Jay Wickham relayed an email from May that asked that training for employees and the new policy follow its approval. County Budget Director Stella Rundy said county officials already were discussing training with representatives of Northeast Iowa Community College who could conduct it. We would be lining that up concurrently with anything you would enact, she said. New County Engineer. Dubuque County Supervisors on Monday voted to hire Assistant County Engineer Russell Weber to be as the next county engineer. Weber will succeed Anthony Bargett, who is leaving for a job with the Iowa Department of Transportation, and Weber will take on the county engineer duties officially as of July 17th. Weber's salary will be $143,325. He is a state-certified engineer who has been employed by both Delaware and Dubuque counties, as Bargett was. Weber's new role would be for Dubuque County alone. Temporarily, surveyor Wyatt Anderson will assume some of the assistant county engineer duties. Bargett gave his full support to both decisions. Here are some local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Aaron J. Bargman, 30, of 605 Romberg Avenue, was arrested at 7:02 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of domestic assault with strangulation and domestic assault with injury. Court documents state that Bargman assaulted Megan M. Lang, 32, of the same address. Lynn K. Johnson, 55, of 1988 Golden Eagle Drive, reported a burglary to a motor vehicle resulting in the theft of items worth $600 at about 6 p.m. Friday in the 3500 block of Dodge Street. Dubuque to offer income-qualified business grants. The City of Dubuque's Economic Development Department is taking applications for grants aimed at helping low and moderate income business owners. Grants of up to $3,000 will be available to help business owners pay for current expenses and, quote, develop strategies for continuous success, a press release states. Recipients will be matched with a business mentor and will participate in a career and professional development program facilitated by Fountain of Youth, with which the city is partnering to administer the grant. To be eligible for the program, business owners must live in a low or moderate income household in the city, have fewer than 5 employees, and have a business that is operated for at least 6 months. The city will start taking applications on July 1. Those who want more information or want to apply for a grant can visit cityofdubuque.org/econdev or call 563-564-5686. two hikes planned at Hurstville Interpretive Center. Dateline, Maquoketa, Iowa. Jackson County Conservation will host two guided hikes at Hurstville Interpretive Center in July. At 1 p.m. Saturday, June 2nd, the organization's summer intern will lead a hike and teach attendees about the nature surrounding the Interpretive Center at 18670 63rd Street. The following week, at 2 p.m. Sunday, July 10th, naturalist Tony Vorwald will lead a guided hike around the Hurstville Prairie. Participants will learn to identify both native prairie plants and common invasive species. Participants must register for the hikes at least 48 hours in advance. For more information or to register, contact 563-652-3783 or email jmeyer, M-E-Y-E-R, at jacksoncounty.iowa.gov. Zoning change approved for potential housing development near Belmont. Dateline, Belmont, Wisconsin. The Lafayette County Board of Supervisors recently approved a zoning change for just more than 50 acres northeast of the village of Belmont for potential housing development. The property is owned by Oldtaffer Land and Cattle Company, Incorporated. The land was rezoned from Agricultural Working Lands Initiative to a rural residential district. Planning and Zoning Committee Chair and Supervisor John Reichling said the zoning change was for a potential housing development on the property. Supervisor Larry Ludlum of Belmont said the development could mean around 30 lots for single-family homes. Grant to bring broadband to 1,700 homes, businesses in Grant, Lafayette counties. Story by Elizabeth Kelsey, thmedia.com. Cuba City, Wisconsin. A Southwest Wisconsin telephone company has received a state grant of nearly $8 million to expand broadband services in Grant and Lafayette counties. The funding for Cuba City Telephone Company is part of nearly $125 million recently awarded to 71 projects across the state by the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. We saw this as an excellent opportunity to reach outside of our territory into some of the underserved areas, said Don Wilmot, CEO and General Manager of CS Technologies, which operates both Cuba City Telephone Company and Belmont Telephone Company. The $7,955,000 grant was awarded to LICT Corporation, the parent company for the two telephone companies, but will be administered by the Cuba City entity. The company will provide an additional $7,955,000 in matching funds. The project will bring fiber to 117 businesses and 1,604 residences in Grant and Lafayette counties. Wilmot said about 925 of those structures are located in the villages of Hazel Green and Benton, with about 800 in rural areas such as Fair Play, Prairie Corners, and Sinsinawa. Wilmot said the Cuba City and Belmont companies have completed fiber to the premises projects at approximately 1,500 structures in and around Cuba City and 900 in and around Belmont. The state funding will help them expand the territory to the south and west. We're pretty excited about it. It's something we could not have done without the state grant. It was not economically feasible, he said. You'll have broadband in 1,700 structures in southwest Wisconsin that might not have had it anytime soon, particularly the ones in the rural areas. He said engineering work on the project has begun, and the company hopes to put the project out for bids by the end of 2021, with construction to begin in next spring at the earliest. Benton Village President Gary McCray said the project will provide a big upgrade for village residents. We need it because different homes, especially out in our new subdivision, are having trouble getting internet access, he said. Some of them work at home and need the internet, and sometimes they can get it and sometimes they can't. So this should make it a lot more solid for all the people in town. McCray also serves as president of Lafayette Development Corporation, an economic development group that has worked in recent years to bring broadband to rural areas. We've been trying to get it countywide, for some time now, and hopefully this will be one step there, he said. Other area companies receiving state grants are MH Telecom, which will bring fiber to 25 business and resident 427 residential locations in Iowa County, and Richland Grant Telephone Cooperative, which will reach 25 business and 695 residential locations in Crawford County. Tours, displays, parade to celebrate Dyersville's 150 years. Story by Laura Drummy, Dyersville Commercial, Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. Dyersville will celebrate its sesquicentennial year with a wider range of events, including walking tours of downtown, historical displays, a parade, and activities in the city square on Tuesday, July 5th through Friday, July 8th. Starting July 5th, walking tours will be available from 5:30 to 7 p.m. of downtown buildings and businesses. Tuesday's tour begins with K&K logo and includes Ideal Decorating and Textile Brewing Company. Wednesday's tour begins at the building housing If You Build It exhibit and the Baseball Hall of Dreams and feature stops at the Todd and Becky Steffen Home, John Sherbring Home, Mueller Hospital, and Conradi Florist before ending at the Palace Saloon Bar and Grill. Thursday's tour begins at the Dyer Botsford Historical House and Doll Museum and stops at the Memorial Building, Midwest One Bank and Savvy Salvage, and ends at Fuse Restaurant and Bar. Friday's tour runs from 4 to 4:30 p.m. and features guided tours of the Basilica of St. Francis Xavier. Drive-by tours of other businesses, such as those in the Highway 20 West Industrial Park and Kramer Funeral Home, also will be available. Information boards will be posted outside the businesses with more information about the history and contribution of the Dyersville community. A food truck will be available from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on July 7th at the Industrial Park. On July 8th, the Dyersville Area Historical Society will have a historical display with artifacts of the St. Francis Xavier School Auditorium from 4 to 7 p.m. Copies of the sesquicentennial book will be on sale during the event showing Dyersville progression in the last 150 years. Books also will be available starting July 1 by contacting the Historical Society at 563-875-2504 or emailing dyersvilleh@windstream.net. There will be a parade starting at 5:30 p.m. The parade route will begin at the Basilica. Participants wanting to enter a float must sign up before 3 p.m. on July 7th. The form can be found at dyersville.org and email to office@dyersville.org. Lineup will start at 4:30 p.m. There is no fee to enter a float. After the parade, at 6:30 p.m., a beanbag tournament will take place in the city square. There are 20 team spots available, and prizes will be given to the first, second, and third place winners. To register for a team, email lead@fusedyersville.com. The night concludes with back-to-back events celebrating the 150th anniversary and downtown summer nights. Evening activities will be held at the city square, and activities will include live music from the Ditch Lilies from 6:30 to 10 p.m., kids' games with inflatables, and a $150 drawing every hour. Carla Thompson, executive director of the Dyersville Area Chamber of Commerce, said the events are a time of celebration of Dyersville's growth and evolution. "It is also a time to reflect how far we have come," she said. "A lot has changed in the last 50 years, but it is good to see the growth and the changes in everything that is going on. All events are free to the public." You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 28, 2022, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. James Scoville. James Scoop Scoville passed away at home on June 10, 2022, surrounded by wife Marcia and their children. James R. Scoop Scoville was born September 27, 1939, in Earlville, Iowa. He is the only child of Howard and Ethel Scoville. Jim was raised in Earlville, attending the Earlville schools. He graduated in 1958. Jim and Marcia Olke were married on February 6, 1960 in Earlville. With their marriage, he inherited a mother-in-law who loved him like her son, and seven brothers and sisters who loved him like their brother. Jim is survived by his wife of 62 years, Marcia, and their four children, Christy Lynn Scoville Rusk, James Kelly Scoville, Carrie Ellen Scoville, and J. Robert Scoville. He is also survived by 9 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren, and many families and friends. Jim was preceded in death by his father and mother, Howard and Ethel Scoville, his mother and father-in-law, Jim and Audrey Olke, his adopted brother, J.D. Olke, and his granddaughter, Tia Scoville. There will be a celebration of life for Jim Scoville on Saturday, June 2, 2022, at the Eagles Club in Asbury, 5900 Saratoga, St. Asbury, Iowa, from 1 to 4 p.m. In lieu of flowers, a memorial fund has been established. J. Bruce Meriwether. J. Bruce Meriwether, 84, completed his life on earth and joined his Heavenly Father at 11:58 a.m. on June 25, 2022. He was surrounded by his family, who were the center and foundation of his life. Visitation services will be Friday, July 1, 2022, at Westminster Presbyterian Church from 4 to 8 p.m. There will be a short visitation on Saturday, July 2, 2022, from 10 to 11 a.m., with services at 11 a.m. The service will be live streamed on the Westminster Presbyterian Church website, https://wpcbdbq.org. Burial service will follow at Linwood Cemetery Chapel, 2736 Windsor Avenue, Dubuque. Eagle Goff Secret and Casper Funeral Home will be assisting the family. Bruce was born in Taylorville, Illinois on January 25, 1938. His parents, Glenna and Lyman, raised him with a strong Christian faith that grounded him and shaped him to become the most caring, loving, and giving man everyone was blessed to know. His Presbyterian upbringing and athletic skills brought him to the University of Dubuque, where he dazzled everyone with his basketball, football, and track abilities. Basketball was his favorite and the sport he credits for his leadership development, importance of teamwork, and love of people. He met Shirley at the university and married her on December 20th, 1960, in between scheduled basketball tournaments. It was the first sign that he had found the most understanding and caring woman on the planet. He graduated with a BA in business in 1960, and Dubuque quickly became their home. Their children, Michael, Kimberly, and John, came next, and then his grandsons, building his sense of family and giving them all he could, became Bruce Life's mission. Part of that mission was being front and center in the community. He told his family, "The community in which you live is yours to nurture. What you give to it, it will give back. It's where your family and friends are. It's where you work and play. Always be about people and the community you build. Relationships are everything." He loved the song lyrics, "People who need people who are the luckiest people in the world." And that was Bruce, always about people and making whatever community he was better for everyone. He lived in Dubuque, Boulder Junction, Wisconsin, and Naples, Florida were all important to him. He loved and cherished every friend and every person he met along the journey, and there were many. Bruce wasn't only about words, he was about action. He was about right and wrong and improving the life we all live. He developed himself into one of the best leaders, mentors, advisors, and doers this world has ever seen. He turned bad situations into opportunities, opportunities into success, and success into transformation. From the local banking community to Iowa and American banking associations and local and state economic development, Bruce was a mover and shaker. He led so many initiatives that impacted many people in positive ways it is almost impossible to list all of them. Highlights are First National Bank, 1960, 1995 president, 1981 CEO, 1989. Iowa Bankers Association president, 85, 86, managed through the farm crisis, active in Dubuque Tracy's, Dubuque Chamber of Commerce president, 1976, Dubuque Theater, United Way, Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, co-founder and chairman, Economic Steering Committee, Diversity Council, 1992, University of Dubuque Board of Directors, 1988-1998, University of Dubuque, acting president, 1996-1998, active in the Republican Party, Bridge to Prosperity Project, the Dubuque, Wisconsin Bridge, dedicated in 1982, and the Telegraph Herald First Citizen Award, 1993. After his banking career, he continued his love and support of the University of Dubuque. As acting president, he initiated the first transformation plan that brought the university to where it is today. He was so proud of the work he and the team did to make it all happen. The UD is where it all started for him, and to give back at the end of his career only made sense. He had come full circle. He successfully retired in 1998. He and Shirley relocated to Lone Pine Lake in Boulder Junction, Wisconsin, the place he loved. His love of fishing, the Northwoods life, and all it offered were exactly where he wanted to be. Those accomplishments are many. His biggest legacy is by far his family, the people he loved the most and with whom he wanted to spend all of his time. Fishing, hunting, golfing, and watching basketball with his sons and grandsons were his favorite things. He loved screen and porch, and visiting hour was always at 5 p.m. where the accomplishments of the day were discussed. He was the best husband, brother, father, father-in-law, grandpa, uncle, and friend anyone could hope for, and he will be greatly missed. He would not want us to be sad, but would want us to remember what he always said. Go live life. Make it the best it can be, and be the best you can be. It only comes around once. Though is he blessed with his life, so many memories are surely his wife of 62 years, his children, Michael, Karen, Merriweather, Kimberly, John, Jerry, David, John, Sarah Smith, Merriweather, his grandchildren, Gus, Katie, Merriweather, Gabe, Alex, Thomas, Merriweather, Luke, Teresa, David, his brother, Bill, Kathy, Merriweather, six, soon seven, to be seven great-grandchildren, many nieces and nephews. He was preceded to death by his parents, Glenna and Lyman Merriweather. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the J. Bruce Merriweather Memorial Fund at the University of Dubuque, 2000 University Avenue, Dubuque, Iowa, 5200-520-001. Camp Manitowash, P.O. Box 246, Boulder Junction, Wisconsin, 54512, and the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, 700 Locust Street, number 195, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Wilma M. Menson, Dyersville, Iowa. Wilma M. Menson, 85, of Dyersville, Iowa, passed away Saturday, June 25th, 2022, at Mercy Hospital in Dubuque, Iowa, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 30th, 2022, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue from 9 to 10 a.m. at the funeral home prior to funeral services. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 1, 2022, at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville, with burial to follow in the church cemetery. Reverend Dennis Quint will officiate. Wilma was born May 21, 1937, in Colesburg, Iowa, the daughter of Joseph and Ardella Reisberg Haley. She married Dale Menson on January 24, 1959, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Garnavilla. Together, they were devoted dairy farmers until retiring in 2007. They enjoyed listening and dancing to polka music throughout the years. Survivors include her children, Lou Ann Randy Lansing of New Vienna, Larry Patty Mensing of Dyersville, Nancy Jerry Marbuck of Manchester, Mary Jo Al Ike of Delhi, Alan Sue Menson of Dyersville, Karen Heiderscheidt of Center Point, Keith Sarah Menson of Dyersville, 19 grandchildren, 20 great-grandchildren, siblings, Shirley Thine of Garnavilla, Joanne Cox of Champaign, Illinois, David Leslie Helley of Cedar Rapids, Wayne Kathy Helley of Garnavilla, and sister-in-law Betty Helley. She was preceded in death by her husband Dale, parents and parents-in-law, son-in-law Ron Heiderscheidt, grandson Owen Heiderscheidt, great-grandchildren Benjamin Brunsman, Ray Lynn, and Kate Marbach, siblings Louis Helley, Joe Peggy Helley, in-laws Leonard Thine, Jerry Cox, and Carol Lloyd Jasper. In lieu of flowers, memorials are preferred and may be directed to St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Beckman Catholic School, and Camp Courageous of Iowa. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.kramerfuneral.com. Alan J. Hartig. Alan J. Hartig, 51, of Dubuque, passed away doing what he loved, spending time on the river with people he loved. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, June 29, 2022, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Wednesday at St. Anthony's Church, 1880 St. Ambrose Street, with Reverend Stephen J. Wysunki officiating. There will be a celebration in Alan's honor at Dockside Barn Grill at Mud Lake Marina, 22500 Gulf Lake Road starting at 5 p.m. Wednesday evening. Allen was born February 9, 1971 in Dubuque, Iowa to Kenneth and Nancy Hardig. Allen graduated from Central High School, class of 1989. He studied carpentry and gained experience working with engines and learning to repair just about anything. Allen was employed with Medical Associates for 25 years. He was married to Tina Bear from 1995 to 2005. They were blessed with three children. Allen loved the outdoors. He enjoyed taking care of his lawn, garden, and feeding the birds in his yards. He was happiest when the sun was shining and he was out on the river. Allen loved boating, fishing, the Packers, most of all spending time with his family and friends. The last few months he spent with his girlfriend, Nancy Weiss, and they were planning their future together. We are heartbroken at losing Allen so suddenly and unexpectedly. He will be greatly missed by all who knew him and loved him. Those who cherish Allen's memory include his children, Ashley Matt Ballhorst Hartig, Fenimore, Wisconsin, Cody Jordan Hartig, Dickiesville, Wisconsin, and Connor Hartig, Iowa City, Iowa, siblings, Don Paul Harbor, Iowa City, Iowa, Dana Scott Lynch, San Diego, California, and Kevin Kirsten Hartig, Troy, Michigan, and his nieces and nephews, Simon, Harlan, Austin, Jack, and Faith. Allen was preceded in death by his parents, Nancy Stokel and Kenneth F. Hartig, a brother, baby Kenny, and grandparents, Elvira Haverland and George Stokel and Helen Henkel and Kenneth A. Hartig. Allen's family would like to thank all the first responders and search and rescue teams who assisted in bringing Allen home to us. Words cannot express how grateful we are. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials in Allen's memories, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Allen Hartig family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Arlene M. Osthoff. Arlene May Osthoff, 84, of Dubuque, died Saturday, June 25th, 2022, at her home. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 28th, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home Crematory with a prayer service at 7 p.m. The Mass of Christian Burial for Arlene will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 29th, 2022, at Church of the Nativity with Father Andy Upa as the celebrant. Burial will be in Guttenberg Cemetery. Arlene was born June 13, 1937, in Dubuque, Iowa. The daughter of George and Irene Waldorf Eigenberger, she married Bob Quinlan on June 20, 1959. They later divorced on May 27, 1992. She married Keith Osthoff in Dubuque. He died May 8, 1996. She was a graduate of the Immaculate Conception Cemetery or Immaculate Conception Academy in Dubuque. She worked at JCPenney's for 27 years in the catalog department, where she became manager before retiring in 1994. She was a member of the Church of Nativity and Catholic Daughters of America. She belonged to St. Anne's Society at St. Mary's in Guttenberg and the Literary Club of Guttenberg. She loved her three daughters very much and was very glad to see them happy and secure. She was also a very loving grandmother and great-grandmother. She believed in doing for others with the motto, "Do unto others what you would have them do unto yourself." Survivors include her two daughters, Carol Ann Cronin and Christine Quinlan, both of Dubuque, one son-in-law, Frank Thomas of Dubuque, three grandchildren, Molly Jason Herrick, Angela John McSpadden, and Jared Thomas, five great-grandchildren, Colin Dash Sage, Koa and Luna, one stepson, Gary Osthoff of Dubuque, three stepdaughters, Gail Merle Hoftender of East Dubuque, Illinois, Jenny Vett of Des Moines, and Jerry Brad Niederhoff of Boston, Massachusetts, one brother-in-law, Cy Tiltgren of Dubuque, one sister-in-law, Mary Alice Varville of Pensacola, Florida, and many loving nieces and nephews and friends. Besides her husband, Keith, she was preceded in death by her parents, one daughter, Vicki Thomas, three sisters, Rita Mae Eigenberger, Jeanette Wagner, and Jean Tiltgren, one brother, Robert Eigenberger, one niece, Deborah Spohl, and her first husband, Bob Quinlan. A memorial has been established. The family thanks Dr. Andrea Reese, Hospitalists of Dubuque, especially Amy, Courtney, Chris, and Kelly, doctors, nurses, and staff at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Nurses and staff at Manor Care and all of her family and friends for being there with their care and support. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Arlene's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Janice A. Ronarud, Darlington, Wisconsin. Janice A. Ronarud, 84, of Darlington, died on Friday, June 24th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Thursday, June 30th at Darlington United Methodist Church, where services will follow. Burial will be in Union Grove Cemetery in Darlington. Erickson Funeral Home is assisting the family. Mary J. Cooley, Dateline, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Mary J. Cooley, 97, of Prairie du Chien, died on Saturday, June 25th, 2022. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 2nd, at Patch Grove Cemetery. Garrity Funeral Home of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. Jean L. McPhail, Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. Jean L. Kiddo McPhail, 95, of Platteville, Wisconsin, died on Friday, June 24th, 2022. Funeral services will be held at noon Wednesday, June 29th, 2022, at the Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Pastor Mary Ann Florkey will officiate. Burial will be at Greenwood Cemetery, Platteville. Friends may call from 10 a.m. until the time of service at the funeral home. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Jean was born at Hazel Green, Wisconsin on May 22, 1927, the daughter of Laverne and Cordelia Fletcher Kiddo. She graduated from Platteville High School. She was united in marriage to Louis L. McPhail on April 20, 1946, in Lancaster, Wisconsin. He preceded her in death on May 25, 2010. She worked for many years at Spurgeon's Platteville as her bookkeeper until her retirement. She enjoyed fishing and going to the casino every now and then. Jean especially loved her time with her family. Jean is survived by her three daughters, Barb, Jim, Hockey, Mary Jo, Jim Quaid, and Peg McPhail, son-in-law, Larry Butson, daughter-in-law, Jody McPhail, 10 grandchildren, Dan Valinda Butson, Jen, Mark Eldridge, Mike Barb Hake, Jeff Andrea Hake, Jen, Justin Flores, Kelly, Kim Butson, J. Daniel McQuaid, Lisa, Tony Anderson, Nikki McPhail, and Casey Nicole McPhail, 21 great-grandchildren. Sister Darlene Richard Kothar, sisters-in-law, Dorothy Gobis and Karen Lorenzen, and nieces and nephews. She was received in death by her husband, Louis, daughter, Cheryl Butson, two sons, Robert and Nancy and Dick, grandson, Max McQuaid, brothers, Melvin, Kenneth, Donald, and Marvin Kiddo. The family would like to thank our house assisted living and a Grace Hospice for all the care given to their mother. Diane L. Oberfohl Kreiman. Diane L. Oberfohl Kreiman, 76 of Dubuque, died Friday, June 24, 2022, at the Mercy One Medical Center, surrounded by loved ones. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, June 29, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. A massive Christian burial for Diane will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 30th, 2022 at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Catholic Church with Father Steve Garner as a celebrant. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. The youngest of 15 children to Paul and Ida Gansimer Oberfohl, she was born May 20th, 1946 in Sherrill, where she was raised on the family farm. On November 4th, 1978, she married William E. Kreiman at the Little Brown Church in Nashua, Iowa. She graduated from Wallard High School. She worked at Dubuque Anesthesia Services for many years as an office specialist up until retirement. She was a member of Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. She enjoyed going out for lunch, playing euchre, dominoes, and having game nights with family and friends. She was an avid reader, sometimes reading three novels a week. She shared a lifelong appreciation of fishing with her family. Her kids have fond memories of their family vacations while growing up. Most of all, she cherished her family and friends. Survivors include her husband, Bill, of 44 years, one daughter, Emily Candace Kreiman of Dubuque, one son, Brett Phyllis Davesy, Kryman of Raleigh, North Carolina. Four stepdaughters, Christy, Steve, Bennett of Ankeny, Iowa, and Lisa, Jill, Richard, Jill, Bruce, Flynn, and Danita, Bo, Abbotts, all of Dubuque. Nine step-grandchildren, Andrew, Hannah, Stacy, Jake, Michael, Matthew, Amber, Austin, and Paige. Four step-grandchildren, one sister, Lillian, Don, Huff of Dubuque, and one brother, Jerome, Ruby Oberfull of Cheryl, her sisters-in-law, Lillian Oberfull, Karen Oberfull, Shirley Oberfull, Joan Oberfull, and Karen Oberfull, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, her brothers and sisters, Alice Tom Mooney, Effie Don Smith, Melvin Audrey Oberfull, Irene Richard Greibel, Delbert Oberfull, Paul A. Oberfull, John Katie Oberfull, Norma Jean Martin Hammerman, James Oberfull, Peter Oberfull, and Albert Albee Oberfull. A memorial has been established. A heartfelt thanks to all the medical staff at Mercy One, especially Nurse Beth P. and Dr. Nichols. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Diane's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Arthur L. Goodwin, Scales Mound, Illinois. Arthur L. Goodwin, 88 of Scales Mound, died on Sunday, June 26, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 30th at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Chapville. Arrangements are pending at Miller Steinke Funeral Home at Scales Mound. William E. McCoy, Dateline, Marion, Iowa. William E. McCoy of Marion and formerly of Dubuque died on Monday, December 6, 2021. A celebration of life will take place at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 9th at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Marion, followed by interment in Mount Olivet Cemetery in Key West. A gathering at Happy's Place, 2323 Rockdale Road, will follow. Jacqueline Schaefer, Dateline, Potosi, Wisconsin. Jacqueline Jackie Schaefer, 70 of Potosi, died on Friday, June 24th, 2022. A celebration of life will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday, July 2nd at Holiday Gardens Event Center in Potosi. Melby Funeral Home and Crematory of Platteville is assisting the family. Mary J. Cooley, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Mary J. Cooley, 97 of Prairie du Chien, died on Saturday, June 25th, 2022. Gravesite services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, July 2nd in Patchgrove Cemetery. Garrity Funeral Home of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. Here are some funeral services. Helen M. Bulow, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 28th. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Service 11 a.m. Tuesday, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. Carmelita Dean, Dubuque. Service 4 to 7 p.m. today. Egelhoff, Siegert and Casper Funeral Home, Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. John J. Etienne, Dubuque. Visitation 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 30th, St. John the Baptist Church, Piazza. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. Celebration of Life, noon to 6 p.m. Thursday, Burien Lakes Pavilion, 11197 Lakeview Drive, Dubuque. Ruth H. Heim, Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation 10 a.m. to noon. Saturday, July 2nd, St. Francis Xavier Elementary School Auditorium, Dyersville. Service, noon Saturday at the auditorium. Mary Ann Knutson, Dubuque. Visitation, 3 to 6 p.m. today, Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Lorraine M. Lute, East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation, 9:30 to 11 a.m. today, St. Mary's Catholic Church, East Dubuque. Service, 11 a.m. today at the church. Theodore V. Lewandowski, Menominee, Illinois. Graveside service, 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 28th. Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary Cemetery, Menominee. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 28th, 2022. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. Thanks for listening.